This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
Fred, you could be the finest woman on this earth. I'm contemptuous of something inside of you. You either can't help or make no attempt to. Your so-called strength, your prejudice against weakness, your blank intolerance.
Is that all?
That's the gist of it. Because you'll never be a first-class human being or a first-class woman until you've learned to have some regard for human frailty. It's a pity your own foot can't slip a little sometime. But your sense of inner divinity wouldn't allow that. This goddess must and shall remain intact.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Popcorn Culture. I am Lee Chui Lin, and I am joining you from home today. Also from home, we have Sharmila Ganesan. And then by his lonesome in the studio, we have Arvin Yuvaraj. Hi, guys.
Hello.
So today on Throwback Tuesday, we are throwing it back to a genuinely old film. We are going to be taking a look at The Philadelphia Story, which stars, it's so charming, I can't wait to get into it. But you heard a little bit of it at the start, and it stars, of course, the inimitable Katharine Hepburn, Cary Grant, and I don't know whether to call him James or Jimmy Stewart, so take your pick.
I feel like it has to be Jimmy just because of how he sounds when he talks. Like, that's not a James.
It's a Jimmy Stewart, no?
It's a Jimmy, yeah. Like, he hates his name in the movie, Macaulay. He's like, I'm no Macaulay.
Call me Mike.
Yeah, so it's Jimmy.
It's Jimmy, yeah.
I don't know if you guys have noticed the theme, but, you know, we tend to try and theme our week-long episodes. And so today we are doing Philadelphia Story because tomorrow we're going to be looking at a much newer romantic comedy, and that is, of course, The Lovebirds. And then on Thursday, we're going to be talking about why it is that sometimes modern viewers struggle to watch classic films. And so that's the part that I wanted to start with. The Philadelphia Story, for people who are unfamiliar, it is a really classic rom-com in that old 40s sense of the word, where everybody speaks really, really fast. The dialogue's very snappy. It's staged somewhat like a play, but it is a romantic comedy with a romantic square. It's not even a love triangle. It's like a love square. It takes place over the course of, I think it's a couple of days, right? Or one day almost.
Just 2 days, the day before her wedding and the day after. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
The day off. Yeah.
Yes. And the her in question is, this rich socialite who's on her second wedding. And then you have these journalists who are trying to get in on the action, take photos and sneak in and pretend to be family friends with the help of her former husband. And then various people fall in love with each other. I think we can just kind of leave it at that. So I thought we could start at the old bit, because did you guys find this difficult to watch because of its age?
I mean, I found it like old. Sorry, I found it old, but old in that sort of charming way. Because when you watch a movie from 1940, then you have to expect certain things. Like, you can't expect, large set pieces. Like, they're all going to take place in like one or two spaces. You know, the thing's going to look like a set. You know, it's going to look slightly artificial. And then there's black and white. So that sort of sets the mood. So for me, I was sort of prepared. I knew what I was getting into. So it didn't feel old in a bad way. But at the same time, it feels like you're watching a sitcom that would have been shot maybe in the early 2000s, because it never strays away from those locations. Like, it's always tight shots. It's always small. There are no, like, you know, wide screen anything. So yeah, but old in a nice, nostalgic, charming way.
I've watched Philadelphia Story before, but not in a very long time, and I haven't revisited like that era of film in a while, actually. And I was pleasantly reminded of how much I love those films, and I think especially for this genre, for romantic comedy, it kind of made me feel quite sad for how far we've in many ways sort of fallen, not just in terms of quality of romantic comedies, but in terms of the regard that was given for romantic comedy, because these were big stars. And I think that's, that's something that I kept thinking about as I was watching this, how smart and clever and I don't know if prestigious is the word, but sort of classy this film feels compared to what most people think a romantic comedy is now?
You know, that's a funny thing because, like you said, this is a revisit for me of Philadelphia Story. And the first time I watched it as a Katharine Hepburn-loving young adult teenager. And so I saw it a very certain way. It's a very glamorous film, right? Because she's wealthy. So you do see it in the... You could view it in a very sort of... shallow way in that it's a beautiful movie to look at. It's very funny. It's quite snappy. It moves quickly along. But then when you watch it again, you're like, oof, some of the blows that they land on each other, because there's a lot of barbs being traded, right? About class, mm-hmm. about whether or not somebody truly cares for another person, about whether or not someone who's maybe a very proud person thought that they were a blameless spouse, whether or not that's in fact true. And so when you listen to the conversations, I was like, oh, actually, this is quite, oh, you know, the blows are really landing. And I think that's part of what you're talking about, Sharmila, with the regard, the fact that they believed that they could say those sorts of things and go to those places within a comedy.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's partly what it is. And it's also because there were things that, this was an era when not everything could be put out there blatantly, right? I mean, even this very genre, I read actually that, and I wasn't aware of this before, that it's called a remarriage comedy, which was primarily conceived because back then they couldn't really depict affairs on screen. And so they kind of got away with it, with this whole, oh, this couple split up, and then what's going to happen? They have these flirtations with other people. But nobody really sort of crosses that line, or you're not sure if they did. And I think because of that, the way they speak, the dialogue, the words they use is very important, because you're kind of in on the joke with them. And a lot of these commentary on whether it's gender or class, it's contained in the dialogue and in the performance more than what we see.
But also, it's such a... I've never seen a movie that's so progressive and so quote-unquote woke, but also so conservative at the same time, because it's stuck in the 40s. So there are these sort of tropes and there are certain things that they say. There's a hierarchy and, like you said, there's a class system, whatever. But it is also very progressive for a movie that came out in 1940, which is surprising to me. So some of the things that they say, I was like, whoa, you know, it sounds like it's ahead of its time. But then other things that they say, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, it's definitely 1940.
I think this is also where the cast actually comes into play, because the central figure, Tracy Lord, is Katharine Hepburn, who at the time was considered too uppity for audiences. She wasn't really hitting right. Even though she had a lot of the hallmarks of what should have made her a star, she was also not popular because she was considered arrogant and overconfident. And I think to have a role like this, where she gets constantly told over and over again, you think you're arrogant, you need taking down. I mean, that's basically what happens throughout the film. The opening scene, the first time you see her, she gets pushed back and shoved onto her face. And so I think that is a part of it, about what we're talking about. The reason why it plays a certain way is also because of the people that they chose to put in those roles. I mean, Katharine Hepburn's just one, but both Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart do so well in playing the respective very posh ex-husband and very working class, struggling writer who has his issues with rich people, respectively.
And Katharine Hepburn actually acquired this script for herself. So it wasn't as if, someone else kind of forced her into that taking down role. I think it was a very smart choice by her to kind of play both sides of that coin. The whole, like, I get to be that haughty presence on screen that, you know, is edgy and is very modern for that time. But I also get to play that, well, I have a heart after all, and I want to be viewed as human after all, which I think was tremendously clever. And this was a comeback role for her.
Yeah. Also, I don't think that you would have ever, ever, ever sided with the ex-husband, Dexter Haven?
Dexter C.K. Haven.
C.K. Haven, it's a ridiculous name.
Yeah. I don't think you would have ever sided with him if it was not played by Cary Grant. Like, it had to be that sort of smooth performance, very casual, very, there's not much effort put into it, or it looks like there's not much effort put into it. It sort of gets you on his side, even though the movie starts out with him being, you know, being like the sort of villain who's the antagonist. So I think that's another thing that works in the movie's favor.
So today we're talking about The Philadelphia Story, which is a 1940 George Cukor directed movie. As mentioned, it has kind of a great trifecta of old Hollywood, classic Hollywood stars. And we'd love to know whether you've seen it and whether you have a fondness for these old romantic comedies and their particular styling. You can let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. And we're going to be right back with more of Throwback Tuesday to the Philadelphia Story. You're listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
You can't marry that guy.
George, I'm going to. Why not?
Well, I don't know. I thought I'd be for it at first, but you just don't seem to match up.
Then the fool's with me.
Well, maybe so, but all the same, now you can't do it.
No?
No.
Come around about noon tomorrow. I mean today. Snob.
What do you mean, snob?
You're the worst kind there is, an intellectual snob. You made up your mind awfully young, it seems to me.
Well, 30's about time to make up your mind. And I'm nothing of the sort, not Mr. Connor.
The time to make up your mind about people is never.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin, and Sharmila. Today on Throwback Tuesday, we're taking it back to an 80-year-old film. We're talking about the Philadelphia Story, and we've covered kind of the story roughly. It's a little bit difficult to cover in its entirety without spoiling it. And I think spoiling is quite important in this case, simply because the twists and turns are actually quite delightful to watch. It's a little bit like a stage play. You don't fully know how it's going to end. And so I think that's part of the pleasure, is following along. And did you guys root for anybody?
I was going to say that actually, you know, the power of a love triangle is that you kind of, or love square, I suppose. But, you know, let's all agree that one end of that square is pretty flawed in this case. But we're really talking about Jimmy Stewart and Cary Grant in most senses. You know, the real strength of a movie with a love triangle is when you root for both of them. And you cannot, you yourself cannot decide who's better, you know. And I think this is really one of those movies, because Cary Grant is Cary Grant. He's, you know, this is the fourth time he's been with Katharine Hepburn on screen. You kind of want that chemistry to see its way through. But Jimmy Stewart is such a curveball. And he's so good in that every man sort of hard-boiled journalist, but really a short story writer role. He's so charming, the drawl. And he actually won an Oscar for this. So, I couldn't figure out. I kept changing my mind. And that might just be my you know, femaleness talking, but yeah, I would have been stuck if I were in Katharine Hepburn's shoes.
No, I was rooting for Jimmy Stewart all the time. Like Macaulay Connor, Mike Connor. Dexter was sort of con man-ish. I don't know why. I think it's the way he spoke, or the, like, again, like, you know, the smoothness of his performance. So I couldn't get into that. It looked like he like one of those salesmen who's trying to sell you something that you shouldn't be buying. but I was definitely on, like, Jimmy Stewart's side the whole time.
Dudes, I struggle with that because, of course, Jimmy Stewart's character comes in with a photographer, right? So he's the writer. He's supposed to be writing the story, but comes in with a photographer, Liz, who is his long-suffering girlfriend, who everyone keeps asking, why doesn't he want to commit to you? So I think that that's another element here. We referenced it earlier a little bit, that there is a huge class. A huge part of this story is about the differences in class, right, between the working class and between this stratified society family that seems to have no problems at all. And I think it's best encapsulated in the characters of Macaulay and Liz, who walk around looking at stuff, taking photos, not quite belonging, but also being secretly smarter, or secretly thinking that they're smarter than everybody else. And that's part of the duplicity of the thing, where you don't know exactly who knows what. I think that's another kind of fun element to the story outside of the love triangle.
It's also just, and Katharine Hepburn, calls this out at one point when she calls Jimmy Stewart an intellectual snob. And that's because he looks down on the fiance that she's about to get married to and kind of says, oh, he's not smart enough for you and all that. And so I think the film treads those lines very well, in that there are many kinds of snobbery. And yes, classism is something that I think even at that time in America, there was a lot of resentment towards these society classes. But intellectual snobbery was also another thing, where they looked down on, you know, quote unquote, good, hardworking men. And instead they were, you know, those who wrote or painted or whatever were considered to be better. And that's what's great about this movie, the fact that it actually layers all those things into these really frothy, fun scenes.
Speaking of the person that Tracy was supposed to marry, so George, right? So his name is George. One thing that stuck out to me was when someone said that George is 32 years old. And I was like, really? Like, he's 32 years old? Like, yeah, like, Tobey Maguire was 18 in the first Spider-Man. Sure, this guy's 32 years old. So that's one thing that made me realize it's a movie from 1940, because it's things that Hollywood used to do back then, like get someone in their 40s to play someone in their 20s. And it kept going on up to like the 70s or 80s, I think. So the moment someone said that, it dated the movie like almost immediately. I'm like, there's no way this guy's 32. He looks like 10 years younger than my dad. So there's no way he's 32 years old. But that stuck out. For some reason, that stuck out throughout.
But I think he also looks especially old because we were talking earlier about the progressive nature of the movie, right? And a lot of that comes in terms of what we think, how we think people can free themselves from societal expectations. And I think this dude, and he is the butt of like every joke. No matter who dislikes who in the rest of the film, everybody dislikes George.
So
I think that it's kind of appropriate that this stick in the mud, who represents societal pressures, who represents this sort of unchanging idea of what it means to be a woman, to be a husband, to be a married couple, it's kind of fitting that he looks both 80 and 32. It's kind of, that's about right.
But speaking of things that feel anachronistic, I suppose, one thing I always hear about movies from this era is that people can't get used to the acting style. That there's just something very stagey and showy about that style. And this is something that extends to most black and white films.
Everyone talks 2 inches from everyone else's face.
Right. And everyone speaks in this kind of tone of voice where they're just like, "Oi, whatever, whatever." And nobody speaks like that in real life. Does that bother you guys? Because for me, once I'm in the space of that movie, it doesn't bother me anymore. It takes me about 5 minutes and then I'm okay. But I've heard many people say they can't get into these films because of stuff like that.
Well, I want you to do the whole show like that now.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I'm Firstly. Watching popcorn culture. I don't even know who I am anymore. I'm obviously not Katharine Hepburn.
No, I don't think it bothered me either. I mean, because again, the moment a movie is like black and white, you have to expect all these things, unless it's done black and white on purpose, like Mad Max or Logan or something. It's like an artistic choice. The moment they don't have a choice but to be in black and white and it's from one of those years, I'm like, yeah, fine. They're going to speak funny, dress funny, act funny. It's okay. It's from a different decade, like a different century, like altogether.
I have a couple of thoughts on this. I think that both Katharine Hepburn and Cary Grant in particular, we'll get to Jimmy Stewart in a second, but Katharine Hepburn has a famous voice. You hear Katharine Hepburn's voice, you know who she is. You know exactly that's Katharine Hepburn. And Cary Grant also has that same quality. So when I hear them acting that way, like Arvin said, I'm like, well, it's the 40s. It's one of those films. It's fine. You know, this is what I'm in for. It's practically a genre unto itself. Jimmy Stewart, on the other hand, I think if you do have a problem with that, then stay for Jimmy Stewart, because Jimmy Stewart's acting in this film to me was so naturalistic that
it could be
now. Like he's such a great funny drunk. He's just such a tremendously hilarious drunk dude. All the scenes where he's ranting and raving while, you know, waving a flute around in the air was just great. And also something that you could see today in any American comedy, I thought, or in any prestige drama for that matter. It's a different style. He looks like he could have done this yesterday.
You know what I was thinking? Like you said, it could be from any one of the movies today, right? And I was actually thinking how easy it would be to remake the Philadelphia Story for a new audience like today. And so many of the people in that movie could be easily substituted by actors from like right now. So like John Hamm as Dexter, Ryan Gosling as Mike. I was thinking Betty Gilpin as Tracy and Mel Brooks as Uncle Willie. So they kind of even look the same, which is so weird when I was watching it, that it could be sort of like remade almost like instantly, like, you know, easily sort of.
Except that it centers around tabloid journalism as well. So there would be a whole update there because you would be able to Instagram. In the show, the fact that there is a delay between the photos and the publication of the story allows for certain maneuvers. But if you were to update it into the modern BuzzFeed era, I think that, there's a lot of commentary that you could insert there that wouldn't detract from the story.
And I think it's a great point. And it's one of the reasons why Philadelphia Story, more than some other films, holds up so well, because the story it tells is fresh always. It's essentially a story of someone who got married perhaps a little too early to someone who perhaps wasn't necessarily wrong for her, but they didn't ever let that relationship grow. Yeah, exactly. And now she has gone another way, but she now meets men who she realizes maybe she needs to allow people to see them for who she is. And that's something I think anyone from any era can identify with.
Last point before we close off. Was it a mood lifter for you guys? Because it was for me. I felt warmed. I felt happy. I felt cheered up by watching this film. And I think that when there are no new movies on at the moment, throwing it, going really, really old is not such a bad idea. What did you guys think?
I completely agree. I felt so happy. I had a huge, silly smile on my face the whole time I watched the film. I would highly recommend it for this point in time.
Yeah, same. I mean, I watched it in the middle of the week because I was working from home and stuff. And when you're in that sort of like mood and, you know, you're not going to work and you have like more energy at the end of the day because you're not in the office. And then you watch a movie like this, it just works. Like you said, it's like warm, it's cozy. Yeah, the movie just works.
So we're talking today about The Philadelphia Story, directed by George Cukor, starring Katharine Hepburn, Cary Grant, James Stewart. If you've seen it, if you plan to see it, if you like movies from the 40s and 50s, if you like this particular genre of rom-com, let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at BFM Radio, and you can write to us at movies@bfm.my. If you'd like to know what's coming up, then you can follow us. We are BFM Popcorn on Twitter and Instagram. And tomorrow, we're going to be talking about a much newer romantic comedy. We'll be discussing the latest, and that is The Lovebirds. You're listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.